This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there, Ken. A little bit of a tough loss against the Eagles, one of those rare occasions where the Ravens had a talent disadvantage, it seemed. But looking forward to the bye week and some regrouping and hopefully getting back on the right foot and finishing the season strong.
Yep, and I guess nothing says finish the season strong rather than a wide receiver revolting on the sidelines, mutinying on the sidelines the way it happened this week. Deontay Johnson, obviously been through a lot in his brief period for the Ravens. I'm sure we'll go over some of this, but reportedly refused to play on Sunday against the Eagles. And it was yesterday or the day before, the message came out that from Eric DaCosta that he was suspended for the Giants game. An interesting move as opposed to a release, say, or whatnot. But let's go back and forth a little bit on this Deontay Johnson situation. Voss, what's your take on it?
Sure. You certainly don't want a player that is refusing to enter the game. That's Corey Dillon when the Ravens made him quit way back when.
Yep.
We're constant refrain on this. On this series is it's a team sport. You're supposed to put the team first. I can understand where he's coming from, maybe a little bit from a playing time opportunity perspective as a player that's entering his contract year, hoping to get paid. It's seeming more and more selfish. I think this generation of players seems maybe more selfish than the previous.
It's wide receivers kind of always had this way, and they know their production is closely tied to remuneration. I mean, one thing I'd say is he's been paid a ton of money for this contract, which he is still on, forgetting the fact that the Ravens are paying him only a fraction of that money. Deontay Johnson made what, $19 million or something this year. It was an absurd amount of money, frankly, for what the Panthers got for it. Acquired from Carolina, we had 50 yards per game there, played just 39 snaps with the Ravens. I think there's a number of indicators that go with the quality of his play and the fact he's only gotten 39 times so far. And I hear a lot of people blaming the Ravens coaches for what happened. And all that seems to fall to Harbaugh because Harbaugh is responsible for everything. And in a sense, he really is responsible for everything as the head coach. But, you know, Monken has not figured out a way to get him involved in the offense more or change to more 11 personnel, which would support the use of the additional receiver there. But I think there's more of an indicator there underlying the fact that he's not playing.
I think he just hasn't produced when given the opportunity. You know, the best way to get more opportunity is to catch the ball when it hits you or run the right route. So it gives Lamar enough, you know, leeway or runway on the sideline so that you're earning more opportunities. I don't really see coaches bench players that are producing at a high level. So that's the first thing. I do think it is somewhat falls on Harbaugh to motivate the players to have a team first attitude, and the Ravens go out of their way certainly to draft players with that mindset. A lot of team captains, they also, you know, usually go for high character players in free agency that are, that love football, so to speak, and they are, you know, take instruction well, etc. And there has been more than usual discontentment in the last few years, but in particular this year in John Harbaugh's locker room compared to how it used to be.
This is a particularly bad one in the entire Harbaugh era. It's hard to remember one as bad. I think the worst of all time was probably Jared Gaither. When he, in 2011, he was removed as the starting left tackle and told he was going to play right tackle. He's going to switch sides with Orr, which was, by the way, an incredibly bad decision by the Ravens to make that choice from a talent perspective alone. Mm-hmm. Gaither, much better left tackle than Michael Orr was.
Right.
He responded by faking an injury and basically or exaggerating an injury, perhaps it was, and he never played another game for the Ravens from that point on, and stole one more contract from the Chargers, but otherwise was very much threw his own career down the toilet.
Mm-hmm. Another one I think is sometimes forgotten, Chris McAllister, how he clashed with John Harbaugh and was benched in a game out in San Diego and finished out the year. And I think he played one more year with the Saints after that, but he was on a Hall of Fame trajectory and his career flamed out and he's not in the Ring of Honor. In my opinion, he definitely should be.
Earl Thomas would be the other big one. And mm-hmm. I still, Earl Thomas, a much better player and a much more important contract to come through for the Ravens. And, you know, claimed he had was late for a meeting because he had to wash his car.
Right.
Just ridiculous, like unaware comments like that are difficult to deal with. The Orioles in the 1970s had a catcher named Earl Williams who frustrated the hell out of Earl Weaver. Earl Weaver's book, it's what you learn after you know it all that counts. Great management textbook, by the way, if you just want it for that. But it's a fantastic book. Has, I think it's about 17 pages devoted to Earl Williams. I thought it was 8 originally, but there's all these stories about, you know, him, they passing each other as Williams is going out into the middle of the night at 1:30, you know, to go out. And Weaver is just going, getting back to the hotel. Just some utterly strange stuff. So the Deontay Johnson saga is probably not as bad as either Gaither or Thomas. Or perhaps McAllister as well. McAllister missed a game in San Diego because right. he had to be sent home. Yeah, that was pretty awful. That was before right. Harbaugh's tenure, but it was very awful. Anyway, the whole Johnson thing, I if there were more money on the line, I'd probably be really more, there'd be more of a different tone to my voice. This, I'm kind of laughing at a little bit because he was just a guy brought in to be a backup who's, you know, honestly earned the number 5 spot in this set of 5 receivers. Mm-hmm. In this set of 5 receivers, I mean, Aguilar, Wallace, they both outplayed him. Aguilar in particular, if you include last year, but Aguilar even this year has outplayed Wallace. He's outplayed Johnson. You know, in terms of what he's done, he's at 7.5 yards a target or so. Johnson has never really been good in his career in terms of the metrics that matter in terms of performance. Yards per target, he's always been exceptionally low, 6.7 his entire career. He's at 5.8 this year. He's been, you know, obviously worse than that with the Ravens at 1.2 yards per target. The only way he's ever succeeded is when he's been in a high-volume offense and he got 170 targets in the waning days of Roethlisberger. When mm-hmm. you know, Ben was throwing all these short passes, all these little bubble screens and whatnot, and Johnson was doing what he could with that. And you know, ended with under 7 yards a target that year, I believe. And I'll have to look at that too. In his 1,100 yard year, yeah, he had 6.9 yards per target that year. I mean, all I can say is if you get 170 targets and he got 169, so let's be accurate about this, you better get 1,100 yards. You better
right.
get 1,100 yards.
Yes, no question about that. Yeah. It was always a little bit of a needle to thread as far as leading up to the deadline. I thought they needed a receiver for depth, but they didn't need a receiver that wanted to consider himself to be a starter because they already had two entrenched starters. And I think we're sort of seeing that is a little bit difficult. Aguilar did not have a very good game against the Eagles, so right. I will note that. Wallace, I think the appeal, the allure of Deontay Johnson, and it's been noted by Spencer and some others, is that he has ability to beat man coverage, and man coverage is what most of the time teams have utilized, leaned on heavily when they do stifle the Lamar Jackson passing offense.
I mean, it's interesting because man coverage is by far less run in total. Okay, so mm-hmm. man coverage rates are in the high 20s league-wide, and zone is all the rest of the time. And so the teams that are good at man coverage, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're good in general at pass coverage. And in fact, teams more lean on zone coverage concepts when they're on the higher leverage downs. And they also, I think, lean on zone coverage concepts more when you're facing a mobile quarterback like Jackson, because keeping eyes on him is so important. Yes. The other alternative is, you know, you have a spy, and that's then another dedicated player you take out of your coverage. So you can go to man. I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying it's a less utilized overall coverage within the league. And remember, the Ravens have their own unique set of problems in this regard. And by the way, traits-based, I'm fine going to traits-based and trying to understand that, particularly with college players. But look, all this great man-beating that he's had his entire career, what has it really gotten him in terms of mm-hmm. of results? And the answer is really not very much. If we could go back to the outcome for a little bit, I'm actually a little surprised that this is a one game suspension. There may be rules that they have with the NFLPA that the team is not allowed to suspend a player without pay for more than one game for one incident, sort of thing. There may be something okay. like that,
mm-hmm.
Or it may be a case of they really want him back and they want to give him a chance to cool down over the bye week and now make all the necessary apologies, get back on the field, and try and take some snaps from Bateman, who we're not sure at this point of the severity of the injury.
Right, right. And there's been some cryptic posts on Bateman's social media the last couple of days that I can't quite decipher, but I was made aware of. So I guess back to okay, forcing.
Can you tell us about those? I haven't seen them.
It's just some pictures. Someone in one of my group chats, someone intimated that Bateman is irritated or just upset with who knows what, but there was just some pictures of him with Lamar and some other things. As I said, I couldn't quite decipher what the meaning of those were, but and I certainly don't follow player social media personally, but yeah, we'll see what it is with Bateman. Ultimately, I would like to see Deontay Johnson reassimilated onto the team and a happy result for everybody, a mutually beneficial result. I think that they may need his services at some point in a shootout potentially, but he's got to make plays. He just really hasn't made plays. I'll take a Kelly Washington type impact or a guy that makes a play or two every game. If not, I guess you stick with Aguilar and Wallace and move forward.
Yeah, I mean that would be great at this point if you can get, you know, one or two plays a game. If I think 1.5 right now, sign me up for that one. I might take one at this point. Mm-hmm. From Johnson, but it's a very frustrating situation, obviously. So we just kind of started talking about the path forward here, though. What do you think the probability is that he ever plays another game for the Ravens? If you had to place it right now,
it's hard to say without knowing the severity of Bateman's injury. Will he ever? So will he be a game day activation? I would say 60%.
Okay, see, game day activation is 60%, and I'm thinking it's more like it's okay. 60% is more like the chance that he actually gets a game day activation. I go with that. That it's more like 40% that he ever gets back in the lineup and plays, because they did this stuff with Marcus Williams and playing him one snap in consecutive weeks and whatnot. And I don't see him playing again for the Ravens. I could be wrong, but I really don't see it. I think he's there for emergencies only. And right now, I mean, I just don't think there's a lot of reason to make the move. I think, you know, first of all, one of the peace offerings, if he comes back with the necessary apologies, let's start with that. He's got to own up that this was not acceptable behavior.
Yeah.
Would be for Monken to have created over the bye week a package of plays that he can be involved in, and then say, hey, here's six plays. You know, get these down, and we'll get you involved in the offense in this game. They'll be in the scripted set, and we'll try and get the ball to you and see what you can do. But I think that's the best peace offering, the best motivational kind of way that they can get him. I'm not even sure I see Johnson making the effort to apologize for this. I think he's trying to really force the Ravens' hands to release him, and I think there's a lot of reasons why the Ravens shouldn't release him.
I agree.
Frankly, should not let him have his way on this.
I agree. There's I think the biggest reason is you don't want him to latch on with another team and he'd be able to hurt you while playing for another team, which is a possibility. That's the big thing. Potential for a comp pick as well. So they certainly don't need roster spots right now. So I don't see much of an upside.
So there'd be three reasons for me why it wouldn't happen. You mentioned one is the going to a competitor. That's significant because there's nobody's looking to sign Deontay Johnson as some sort of futures deal. You know, it really wants to, you know, yeah, let's bring Deontay Johnson and then that'll give us a couple of weeks advantage in signing him to play for us next year. I mean, there isn't a team like that. I don't believe there is. There might be some team, the Chiefs or some other team, that would want to have him for the playoffs. That team would then have some insights into the Ravens' offensive playbook because, of course, Johnson has learned it so well in his time here.
Yeah. Good point. So,
and then the comp formula, he will not be a comp pick guy. He won't generate a comp pick, but he can be an offset to a signing potentially. And he'd have to sign for about $3 to $4 million to make that barrier. So I don't think that's actually likely. I think he's going to be on a vet min contract next year would be my guess after what are basically events that have got him banished from three different teams. I think that's what he's now to.
So yeah, honestly, I think he's an overrated player. Mm-hmm. His name is more than his actual ability.
All right. Fair enough. I got to really hope, obviously, Bateman is all right. But the other player this impacts is Tez Walker, potentially getting on the field and getting some snaps. And I'm sure he's not happy with his number of snaps either, or his number of targets, right? But which I believe is still zero. He's had a couple offensive snaps now, but
maybe one, if at the most. It seems to be a common thing with Lamar Jackson offenses that receivers aren't happy with their share, but. Again, it's a team game. It's not the game. The goal of the game isn't to maximize wide receiver stats. It's to win the game. So whether it's Hollywood Brown or Bateman or Odell Beckham last year, apparently wasn't happy with his, and Deontay Johnson. It is what it is. You know, I think you need a guy like Aguilar, maybe Aguilar's mentality to really be your number three, maybe with some better hands. Yeah. A player with that type of guy.
It's incredible that Aguilar really seems to be maybe the individual player who could most get through to a player like Johnson. I mean, they're both wide receivers. Aguilar's been in this point and you know, obviously been up and down in terms of production, played with some crappy quarterbacks, played with Lamar Jackson, you know, knows the benefits of playing with Lamar and has had, you know, one of his best career seasons here, even though it wasn't super high volume. It was a very fine season. And you know, apparently let him stay at his house when he first showed up to play here. I mean, he'd be a natural to try and get through. And he's the guy he would lose playing time to.
Right.
Aguilar would potentially lose playing time to Johnson is what I mean by that.
Yeah, and Lamar too. I think this is where Lamar, and we saw it, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, where he seemed to kind of grab the – the leadership mantle and say, if I hit you in the hands, I expect you to catch it, and sort of acting like a really veteran type of guy who's been around the league now for a while. And he should be able to get through to Johnson too. I believe they're both Florida guys. And I know Lamar was, they seemed to have a good rapport at least. So we'll see what comes. But certainly player not entering the game and then getting suspended is unusual for this franchise, and hope it turns out well in the end.
Okay. All right, let's move on. We got some post-bye health status to talk about because a few things are going on. Kohler and Mullett, by the way, have both gone to IR, and they can return for the playoffs for certain. They might be able to be back for week 18. I don't know for, or even, yeah, I think week 18, 14, 15, 16, 17. I think that's right. I think it would be week 18. Neither of those resulted in an offsetting move to take that roster spot. So the Ravens are actually at 51 right now. And one of the segments that we usually normally do in this show is to kind of rank who's next up to be cut. And on some very deep Ravens teams in the past, that's really been a hard kind of decision to make. You get bone to cut through, basically, kind of thing. But the Ravens don't have a lot of walking wounded right now. So mm-hmm. They're not trying to protect a lot of guys. And they are actually in pretty good shape health-wise. And they have these two open spots. But I think this is 2 weeks of 18, effectively a vet min salary that they save. So looking, this is like a couple $100,000 in cap that they created by leaving those roster spots open.
Yeah, that's an astute point for sure. There's no reason to. They don't need to fill it, certainly during the bye. And there's not players that are, chomping at the bit to help the team either. So it makes sense to me, perfect sense. But obviously, once you get back into game day preparation after the bye, I think I would expect them to get back up to 53 one way or another.
Yeah, I would agree. And they, in part, you kind of don't want to waste practice squad elevations on players who have them. They have a certain value in themselves to them. So if you want to send a player back down or cut him and then re-sign him, you would still have a chance to use only three practice squad elevations. So you do tend to want to sign players. And that's what they did with Christian Welch. I think they decided mm-hmm. that he was going to play special teams for them for a fair amount for the rest of the year. And they have that spot available. Mm-hmm. Speaking of some other linebackers, Roquan Smith back and healthy, named the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee mm-hmm. for the Ravens today. Played big against the Eagles. I thought played pretty well. Certainly would be happy if we got that play for the rest of the year.
Well, the half sack was the big play. To me, what I really want to see out of Roquan is more splash plays. When you pay the highest paid inside backer in the game, I expect some more splash plays, takeaways, forced fumbles, tip balls, interceptions, and sacks. So that's what I hope to see. I think that's what the defense is missing. Right now they've seemed to solidify the back end where they're not getting balls thrown under their head anymore. They're limiting big plays. Now the next step is to start generating more takeaways.
One of the things that should help Roquan make more big plays is the return of Travis Jones to a healthy status. And I believe Michael Pierce will probably be back for the Giants game. They could actually mm-hmm. activate him the week after that. But from the practicing full and all that, it almost seems like he was just that far away from being available for the Eagles game, which would have been, by the way, that would have been a big difference maker for this team had he been available. But he'll be a big boost for the interior defensive line. They need one of those guys on the field every single play they run. Mm-hmm. And it's just Ravens pass rush is driven from the inside. It just would be a big boost.
Yeah, and the Giants have a pretty good run game. Their rookie back, Tyrone Tracy, is having a really good year. Yep.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Making me some money in my fantasy leagues.
All right. I haven't heard anything definitive or even, conjecture with regard to Van Noy's seriousness of injury. The drop off at outside linebacker is a very big one, and the Ravens need to get that figured out, obviously. Whatever is left in that free agency pool, the unsigned pool right now, it can't be much. Yannick Ngakoue is somewhere else right now.
He's on the Patriots active roster.
Yeah. So there's not if you're already down to him, if you thought, oh, we can go out and get Yannick Ngakoue, is my point. You can't mm-hmm. anymore. Replacement level has been degraded at that position.
They're basically looking at players that are contemplating retirement, I think, or contemplating coming out of retirement at this point of the year.
Could be. And we still might have a surprise where somebody is released to seek a Super Bowl ring kind of thing, where some team owes them a little bit of money at the end of their contract. And we might get some value from a player like that. It's conceivable. Those players always seem to go to the Chiefs for whatever reason.
Ring chasing.
Obvious reason. Yeah, well, but they could do that in Baltimore too, in theory. But right. But it's just that, you know, they want a 27% chance to get a ring instead of a 20% chance to get a ring. Then yeah.
But you know, without Van Noy, certainly taxi outside linebacker core. Davius Robinson over 90% snaps. That was maybe the highest mark I've ever seen from an outside linebacker since I've been looking at the SIS site.
Well, the Suggs had regularly had numbers over that. In fact, in his full season, I think the year he won DPOY, he played at 95% of the snaps. Yeah.
In 2013.
11. Wow. 11.
Yeah. Oh, 11. That's right. Yeah.
So anyway, some other injuries we need to talk about. And I guess the big one is Keaton Mitchell being inactive. A weird move. Harbaugh didn't completely explain it. He did talk about it a little bit. I said, well, serious knee injury. I just want to give him some rest, and I want to see what Rasheen Ali can do. I'm not sure those three things put together, I completely agree. I think there might be some regression or condition about Keaton that they were concerned about in this particular case. If that's the case, it could really endanger the rest of the year for him. But he was not on the injury report.
I think that makes a good bit of sense. Why have they kept Ali around all these weeks now that Keaton's been back? Ali did have a pretty decent kickoff return, but I think that makes sense. It's odd to rest a player the week before going into a bye. You'd imagine that 1 week would be good, not two. It was a pretty serious, pretty bad knee injury, you know, and we weren't sure when he was going to be able to come back. So time will tell, but it really would be nice to get his playmaking back on the field if he can get back up to speed.
When Dobbins came back from his knee injury, and I don't think Dobbins was as serious, but he tried to come back too early and had mm-hmm. some scar tissue issues that remained, and they had to be cleaned up with an arthroscopic procedure that kept him out additional weeks once he was back. And I hate to speculate about this, but I'm thinking about Keaton Mitchell. I'm thinking there might have been cleanup work necessary to be done.
Dobbins is back on injured reserve again for a knee.
Yep.
So, that he suffered against the Ravens.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep. All right, let's move on. Tampa and Hardy, really the only players on IR that are still a chance to come back at this point. Kohler and Mollett, I guess we would add to that, but they're at the very end of the year. In any case, the point being, the Ravens are not in any danger of running out of IR DTR spots right now. Tampa apparently will return. Hardy, it would be my bet that he does not return. I don't know where you are on that at this point.
I would agree, although moving on from Deontay Johnson would make that more likely that he would return. Yeah. But I mean, to me, the one you really want back is Kohler, if you can get him back. Mollett, I think it was a questionable move to bring him back, considering they had so many options, and I thought they overpaid a little bit for his one-year wonder type of season. And I'd probably expect Mollett to stay on IR and be gone from the team next year.
He's one of the few, like, easy, harvestable cap dollar savings that they have, so I think that's probably correct. All right. We mentioned they had two additional.
231. That's the average number of apps used by many companies. This leads to a lot of context switching that can distract employees and costs your company. Luckily, Grammarly can help. Grammarly's AI works in over 500,000 apps and websites, making it easy for your team to crank out clear, on-brand emails, documents, messages, and more. In just one click, they can go from blank page to first draft, all without leaving the page they're on. Grammarly has 15 years of experience building effective, secure AI that can be implemented in days with minimal IT overhead. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences, whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon. Join 70,000 teams who save an average of $5,000 per employee per year using Grammarly. Go to Grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise-ready AI.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
There's some questions from the audience here. We got quite a few lined up. And Voss, if we've done any of these before, I try to take them and copy them over. But if we've done some of these before, you stop me in terms of doing this. The first one is from Alec Poulianis. Says, going into what would like to be your opponent's final offensive drive. Okay, so this is your opponent has the ball. Would you prefer to be up 3 or 4 points? And he says, for me, it would be 3 because 4 brings out added aggression on offense, which I believe only hurts you.
Interesting point. If you're telling me that this is the final drive of the game, I would agree with Alec. 3, because they're saying let's play for overtime and your opponent doesn't force to chase the touchdown. If there's going to be another drive coming back to you, I'd rather be up 4, because if they score a touchdown, then you can send it to overtime with your field goal. So anyway, interesting question.
I think one of the things that about 4-down football has become so dominant in the NFL is that when you're in negative territory, it's still a 4-down football game all the way down to about the 40-yard line. Field goals still keep getting longer, but still, I'd say the 40-yard line is a 58-yard field goal. Till then, you're playing 4-down football, and then after that, you're playing 3-down football, and that is an advantage. And I think your points are right about. Things change very rapidly if there's any chance for redraw value on that, on your situation, if you have a chance to respond. All right, Minion Hunter, can you please speculate on the reasons why each of the backup offensive linemen are not playing, particularly Cleveland and Jones?
I think Harbs likes his guys, and Harbs is a stubborn guy and maybe gotten even a little bit more stubborn as he's in his 17th year now. I would like to see Ben Cleveland at least in a rotational role. I've just been consistent on that since week one. I guess the other factor is continuity. And after the five fingers in the glove, they're playing together next to each other. They're getting better on handoffs and that sort of thing. But it's tough to say what's really going on there with Ben Cleveland, who was Harbaugh's handpicked guy coming out of the draft that has just never really gotten an opportunity to play consistently.
Very, very unusual that they've failed on the love of football so much with Ben Cleveland. And this is a case where the Ravens' legendary ability to ferret out these players who are a little bit selfish and whatnot. This is something I bet since Cleveland has been drafted that they're trying to more seriously dig into during their question sessions. Those interviews are apparently they're very interesting. I heard Ray Rice talk about that, and there's people from all around you are asking you questions, and it's a little unnerving, supposedly. I'll talk briefly through the three players. Cleveland, I would like to see in a rotational role to see not so much what can he do from 2020 in 2025, because I think he's almost certainly gone, but can he help the Ravens in the playoffs? And I think if they did that down the stretch, they could figure out they'd at least start the crowbar working on trying to pry Falele out of there if that's the right move. In terms of Voorhees, I'd like to see the same thing. And in that case, it's not a matter of he's going to play better than McCary, because I don't think he will down the stretch. McCary's had his problems. He certainly had a terrible game this week, ton of penalties in total, but his overall play has not been bad. And frankly, the Ravens have been fairly lucky with the results they've gotten from him. I think that if they went to Voorhees, they'd get a sense of how ready he is to be handed a role in 2025. And that would be what I'm looking for. I wouldn't be looking to replace him for the playoffs at this point. I think they've gotten through most of the danger of injury at tackle. And I say that, and boy, just watch what might happen. But yeah, there you go. And with Josh Jones, I would like to see rotational play at right tackle as well. I think there'd be value there. Keep him a little bit fresh. I don't think that he's a guy that you need to have. You're worried about the playoffs, and he's not a guy you're worried about 2025 either. So I it's just a matter of wanting to see maybe what you have, so you can make the best plans you can have for the postseason this year.
Do you think that McCary's relative lack of size next to Linderbaum's relative lack of size is harming Linderbaum in recent games?
I think it's hurting both of them, and we see it in a game where they play an enormous front like the Eagles, just did. That a player like Jordan Davis and Milton Williams, who's Milton Williams is a good player, but he's not the guy who should have all those pressures in a game that he had. I mean, it's just is a very big game for him. And I felt a lot that was an A gap that could get bombed. I also felt that in particular, Linderbaum is extremely well suited to play between two large, lesser athletic guards, and the Ravens have those guys. They're just not willing to play. Voorhees, by the way, presents the same problem for Linderbaum, being a little bit of a smaller frame and whatnot, even though he's 6'5".
Doesn't have the sand in the pants. Dovetails into the next question from Kid Rock 20 very well. Do we have the offensive line to win the Super Bowl? Feels like they lack the ability to impose their will in the run game and instead rely on Lamar and Henry magic to win in the run game instead of great blocking.
I guess I'll start with this one and just say that it's the Ravens need to get another tight end in there who can block so that they can use Ricard in the backfield to really bring back point of attack blocking and succeed at that. I think they can do that well if they have Ricard back there. I think that he's really the key player. They look so bad zone blocking against the Eagles. The Eagles just were basically throwing bodies wherever they felt like in this game, crossing faces, going behind people, just, you know, get out of my way. It was basically from the defensive lineman. I just can't see them sticking with, you know, the full set of run concepts if they face the Eagles a second time. And I'm trying to think about who else they'll face that is as big and as athletic as the Eagles, because there's probably no one. But maybe, you know, a team like the Detroit Lions with Ayla McNeil and others might give them some trouble as well.
Lions defense has been ravaged by injury. I kind of like Green Bay tonight, to be honest. As we record on Thursday, 4.2 yards per carry for Derrick Henry versus the Eagles is not up to his standard this year. Philly and Howie Roseman have demonstrated how investing in the trenches at the expense of linebacker can still result in a pretty good run defense. Gordon McGinnis had a comment after the most recent game that the Ravens offensive line is good enough against average defensive lines, but the guards can't hang against really good defensive lines. And I think that's probably true when we see the Steelers have success, the Chiefs have success, and now the Eagles have success getting bottling up the run game and getting the offense off track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. The funny thing is, and it's not funny, could have been a lot worse than it was, but the Ravens won snap count 71-54 in this game. So the fact that the defense kind of did their job to a certain degree, still got manhandled, I thought, by the Philly offensive line. But they didn't get any big plays out of Jalen Hurts in this game. They also didn't get any real negative plays, and that's what the Ravens needed. They needed to put the game in Hurts' hands and have him lose it to them. Kind of sucked.
Time of possession by 6 minutes, I believe.
Kid Rock 20, another question. Can you guys explain Ali over Keaton Mitchell, that decision? Am I missing something obvious?
I think we already touched on this. I don't think there's anything obvious about it, but whether it was a rest or a flare-up of the knee injury.
Yep, I would agree. I don't think we need to say anything more. Isaiah says, dang, Ken, it hurts seeing Marcus May get an interception his first game as a Charger. That's just a statement that you're absolutely correct. It does really hurt. Is a kind of a sucky set of circumstances. Had they played the Chargers a week later, they probably would have gotten Marcus May, and now they're back ahead of the Ravens, by the way.
Right.
So, It's just a very bad situation in terms of what was going on.
Yeah, unfortunate for sure.
Felix Billington, the last question. With the way Stone is playing, I think he's a potential cut candidate for the Bengals. He's absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Felix. This offseason, could you see him being the fix to our free safety issues next year?
Well, if he's a potential cut candidate after signing a big contract, he's got the question of how well he would be playing next year, I think. I never considered Stone a free safety. I think he's a split safety at mm-hmm. best. Could he be the third? Would I like him to be the third safety next year? Sure. I think could maybe reclaim what he had last year. Mike McDonald had him, you know, in the right place at the right time, and he got his hands on the ball and caught it. But as far as a starter, I would not be too optimistic.
Effectively would be a commitment to playing him, I think, in most nickel packages. And the Ravens have some cornerback depth this year. They're going to lose some of it in Stevens, Armour Davis. We don't know if he'll make the team next year. He might, but that'll be a question. So really, I think it's a right player, right place situation for Stone for me. There is a price where I think the Ravens will get more out of Stone than the Bengals did this year, certainly. Mm-hmm. But the question is, you know, is Stone willing to play for, you know, $2.5 million or maybe less next year?
Yeah, I would not be. You know, the unfortunate thing is both Kyle Hamilton and in my mind, Darius Washington are best suited closer to line of scrimmage, but they're both forced to play on the back end.
Right.
I think you want a really natural safety, a natural rangy safety. Marcus Williams, when he was playing at his peak of his powers, that's the kind of guy you want. That's the kind of guy you need.
You willing to expend your first round draft pick on it?
I would be, yes. Yep. Okay. Top 100 pick for sure.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Let's see. Did we want to go over one other question here? Take care of us for the day?
Yeah, we had the question, the topic for each other. As we're in the bye week now, we have an opportunity to kind of take a little bit of a step back from the week to week. And I thought interesting topic would be three players with the most to either gain or lose from a contract money perspective over the final stretch of the Raven who are on the Ravens right now. And, okay. Go ahead, Ken.
I can go first, but I think you got some of the good ones here. Maybe you should go first here, just in order these are. Go with your first.
So the first one for me is Mark Andrews. I think at about a third of the way through the season, we were both thinking that he was a likely cap casualty because of his reduced role and balloon or expanding cap hit. And you know, you got to save money where you can. Mark Andrews has really come on strong in the last month or so. $11 million potential savings. But I think if Mark continues the trajectory that he's played the last few weeks through the rest of the season, I think he probably earns that another year on that contract.
So, okay, so it'll be the final year. And the final year of contracts, by the way, if you don't really follow cap stuff, the final year is the year players get cut because they have the highest payments in that year, and you typically want to move on at that point. To me, with Andrews, if you don't cut him, you probably have to extend him. And I just don't know if I'm willing to do that. It'd be a big commitment of money. They have a bunch of other decisions they need to make in the third year. This is a ruthless business, football. And you know, the Ravens have all these third year homegrown high value players that they need to retain. You know, Travis Jones, Tyler Linderbaum, Isaiah Likely, and others. And just so happens, Likely and Kolar are also signed exactly to the same endpoint as Andrews is, which is really an unfortunate kind of a situation. It's one of them really has to be extended early over this offseason. You can't just go into 2026 and or 25 and let them all play out their contract the same year. That'd be very dangerous. But I do think that they you know, they have some thinking to do about who they cut, and there just aren't a lot of options. But I agree with you. Mark Andrews could be playing for a lot down the stretch here. Let me bring up some other players. The first one I'll bring up is David Ajabo. I think he's a big risk not to make the team next year. A guy who only played 8 snaps when the Ravens only have one pass rushing outside linebacker. Tavius Robinson, you know, obviously got a lot more playing than time. If he's already behind Tavius Robinson, who's a year 2 player, he's in year 3 and a second round pick. This is not a good situation for David Ajabo. And I think if you haven't adjusted down both your ceiling and floor for his career level of play, then I think you probably are a little bit behind.
Yeah, I was behind you as far as doing that. I'll admit that entering the year, I thought you were maybe selling his potential a little short, and he has not had nearly the year that I was hoping for, or almost worst possible scenario. 1.8 million potential savings if he does not make the team next year. I did think it was a little bit interesting that Adisa Isaac, after earning the game day activation ahead of Ojabo 2 weeks ago and playing, I believe, about 20 defensive snaps, did not play on defense this week. So he played behind Ojabo. Seems like they're still trying to sort out that room without Van Noy.
It's kind of a strange situation, too, because Isaac played 24 special team snaps this week. Mm-hmm. And Ojabo doesn't play special teams. He's played 8 defensively and none on special teams. It really shows you kind of some of the relative valuation that the Ravens still have in terms of making sure the special teams units are filled. But I personally believe the Ravens are looking at as there's not that much of a difference between Isaac and Ojabo, but they really wanted to keep Isaac probably ready to go on special teams. Maybe they were planning to get him in at the end and see what he could do had the game either been out of hand or they had a big lead.
Why doesn't Ojabo play special teams? I mean, he should have the athletic ability. Odafe-Oli was playing special teams at one point in his rookie year. I don't understand that.
Odafe-Oli definitely does have the athletic ability. I think David Ojabo would be a real question. He's a bigger, softer player. Doesn't run nearly like Oway does in terms of going down the field. And the linebackers that you get are on special teams are the really good linebackers who can run and usually can cover. Board and Judon and Tyus Bowser and players like that. It's very rare to have defensive ends or even edges play on special teams. It's really quite rare. And the Ravens have a situation right now where they have several of those players. But Ojabo is a larger, heavier situational passer. He's not, he wouldn't be the guy.
Fair enough.
All right. So let's see. It's your turn again, right?
My turn. And I will go with Ronnie Stanley, coming off maybe his worst game of the season. Obviously, this was a proven year for Ronnie. It was known entering the year. He's played relatively well, pretty well, I would say. Mm-hmm. Over the cap, currently values his play at $16.2 million. I think that number could fluctuate a good bit based off of his next 4 or 5 games in the postseason.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, he's there's a lot of variation in offensive line play. Had a very bad game this week as I scored it. PFF didn't think it was nearly as bad, and that's okay. But there's a lot of variation in offensive line play. You just got to accept that you're going to have occasionally a very bad game. This was one of them. And to me, I don't think it affects the Ravens' need for Ronnie Stanley. I think they have a very significant need. I don't think that I'm completely sanguine with the possibility of moving Rosengarten to the left side at this point. It might work out. I just think maybe another year on the right side would be the way to go. It's not like he's on a terrible position track relative to where I'd expect a rookie to be. I think he's right. He's right on target. Even for a second round rookie, I'd say he's right on target, but I'm not convinced at this point that he's ready to move over to left tackle. They're giving him a ton of help. Terms of chip blocking, at some point you got to have a left tackle who can take on some of that responsibility. But I would agree completely. Ronnie Stanley, these last 4 games mean a lot, whether he plays here or somewhere else in terms of value.
Yep. And if you do move Rosengarten to the left side, you need a right tackle. So you need a tackle either way. But we'll see. Maybe this is kind of perfect for the Ravens that he's playing at a high level, but on an elite level, so they can sign him for an affordable contract. But anyway, for Ronnie's sake, we'll see. Your turn, Ken.
Yep. So I specifically avoided a couple of players that you might have guessed would be in this list in terms of Deontay Johnson and Marcus Williams. I think the die is already cast on those two players in terms of them leaving Baltimore. And I don't think it's likely that any amount of play they would get would largely change the valuation of that player for next year, for whatever team they play for. But a guy who it was up as a free agent, and it's really a question whether the Ravens re-sign him, is Patrick McCary, a guy who's had an overall really solid year, but there's a lot to point to that you don't like. And there's a lot, maybe traits wise, that you don't like. We talked about earlier, the relative size with him and Linderbaum being a real small A gap that larger players can try and exploit. and that's not a good thing to have. But also he's had some problems with penalties during the year, and he's had problems like this and a couple of games like this where he's looked really bad in other ways. It's interesting because he didn't have any penalties this week, but he had a truly awful game in a lot of other ways versus a sizable line.
Yeah, McCary's an interesting one. I think we earmarked him as this was probably going to be his last year. That was before he claimed a permanent starting job. His play's been a little bit up and down, a little down lately. We've seen guards get paid in this league now. The position that really seemed to catch up to the market or the expansion of the cap this last offseason was guard. So should be very interesting. That's a good choice.
Let's talk one more second for that. $9.3 million, an OTC valuation. What's the highest you would go in terms of AAV for a three-year deal to McCary?
6.5, I think, for me. Yeah. I'm not a huge McCary fan, but that's probably lower than he could make on market.
Yeah, that's exactly where I would be too, about $20 million for 3 years. And if you do that, you get good backup play, and hopefully you don't have to play him. But, this year he got his chance, and he's done okay with it.
Yep. Okay, my last player is Brandon Stevens, a player who entering the season we thought was in line to get a big payday this offseason. The Ravens drafted Nate Wiggins, hypothetically, as his successor. Has been playing better the last few weeks now that the safety situation is finally sorted out and stabilized. OTC has him worth $4.2 million, up from, I think it was about $2 million a month ago. It's impactful for the Ravens if they can get him playing at close to where he was last year. And let's not forget, he had a very good year last year. He even had one game where he shadowed Ja'Marr Chase and locked him down pretty much for the whole game. But also for the compensatory potential.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of compensatory pick value coming from Brandon Stevens leaving the Ravens. I also don't think it's likely that they re-sign him. I think they want to get younger at the position, and just that means you have to have less veterans. The one exception they're going to make to that, I believe, is they're going to probably extend Marlon Humphrey, because that makes a lot of sense with this being the last year of his contract coming up. So we talked a little bit before the year of Humphrey or Andrews, you probably couldn't keep them both. They make similar amounts of money. It's a lot in the last year of the contract. And it'd be maybe kind of ideal if you let one go and extend the other. You wouldn't necessarily have that luxury. If they both had kind of not particularly good years, you might decide, we're really weak at corner. We need to keep Marlon, but we don't want to extend him yet, and we have to cut Andrews. That would be a worse situation. So if at least extending Humphrey, which I think makes a lot of sense at this point, is something they can consider now.
Yeah, I'd be definitely in favor of extending Humphrey. I think he's been their best player on defense and the best defensive player they've had throughout the Lamar era. And when you look at it, Humphrey and Andrews and Ronnie Stanley, really the cornerstone contracts along with Lamar, not being able to keep all three, if they are playing well, is the opportunity cost of adding that cornerstone contract of Roquan Smith, who was not a homegrown player.
Right. You have Nnamdi Madueke also fits into that group. And then they're going to have to figure out what to do with Travis Jones as well, which will be a very big one. And I think we've gotten good insights into just how important Travis Jones is to this defense this year. I think they will have to. I would really like to see them get that done this year. That would give me the least heartburn of any decision they might make.
He's at the top of my resign list too.
One player left that I think is a player who could do fortunes will swing dramatically, and not necessarily during just the last four games, but during whatever time the Ravens have left in the playoffs as well. And that's Justin Tucker. I don't think this is a surprise to anyone, but Justin has to start making some kicks again. If he didn't, he won't be out of the league, because there's a lot of teams who are looking for a kicker, happy to try Justin again, happy to have a Hall of Famer. In a lot of ways, Justin Tucker is a very good guy to have around your team, period, because he takes a lot of the he's a humorous guy, takes a lot of the pressure off other players, never blaming anybody else for anything. We haven't ever seen that from Justin during his entire career here. So there'd be a lot of teams who'd be interested in him if he were done here. But it's gotten to the point, and it's incredible that at a 70% field goal percentage. We're at a point that Justin Tucker might be gone any second. In the early 1980s, Rolf Benerschke, the Chargers kicker, had a 75% career success rate. And at that time, that was the highest in NFL history.
Wow. Okay.
So the game has changed.
Yes.
And Tucker is playing for an awful lot these last few weeks. It's sad to see that the last kick he had, perfect end over end rotation, was clear. He just aimed it to the right.
It seems that maybe deducing what is going on with Justin Tucker, he lost some of his leg strength, and that's why the ball was fading to the left, and all of his misses up until that last one were to the left. So he had to adjust his aim point, and now it's tough to rely on him. I certainly earned the rest of this season based off of what he's done for this franchise and the fact that you're probably not going to be able to find anybody comparable at this point. But if this is his last year and he flames out and he falls off the cliff, $7.5 million of dead money would be hit the cap next year because he was, at least partially because he was restructured previous to the season.
Yep, that hurts. Obviously, they could probably do a 2-year move, which spreads that cap, but it's still going to be very expensive. So, 7.5 is 7.5. If that's what it is. I'm not looking at it right now, but I take your word for it.
Yeah, I just checked it. 7.5 dead.
Voss, always a pleasure to do this show with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Sure. My pleasure as well, Ken. Always enjoy the show. I am at Vasilis Fiamata on Twitter, X, VASILISFIAMATA.
All right. We'll have more news on Voss's restaurant, I think, in the coming month, and we'll hopefully keep you updated on what's going on. If you don't, go out to the website, thefiamata.com. Yes. Other folks out there, if you would, please recommend the show to a friend. Show an old person how to play a podcast online. I had a funny comment about that I saw from Alvindo Royale, but I appreciate that. Just show them how to play it directly off their PC if they don't know how. And really appreciate the listenership. For Vasilikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores, making the switch as easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.